meeting back to order with us again this afternoon, as was this morning. Representative Moses and Representative Kelly, Representative Foster. Good to see you, Representative Foster.
Co-Chairman Chenault, yes. Co-Chairman Meyer, Representative Katula, and Representative Hawker. We are going to take up the BSA base student allocation, House Bill 362, but we do have a new CS on the neighborhood electric vehicles, and I think this will be relatively quick. So let's go ahead and knock out the neighborhood electric vehicles and then take up 362, and if time permits, then we'll revisit House Bill 51. Okay, House Bill 403, I just need a motion to adopt the new CS.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to adopt the blank committee substitute for HB 403 version 24 LS 1229 /L lookup dated 4/4/06 as a working document for the committee.
Thank you. Any objections? Seeing none, again, this is House Bill 403, Neighborhood Electric Vehicles. Ian?
Mr. Fisk, Mr. Chairman.
Tell us the changes.
Yes, sir. Basically, what we did was, in response to some of the concerns that came up in the first hearing, we eliminated Section 1 of the bill, and then we also added in language on page 3, lines 9 through 11, that specified that a low-speed vehicle may not be operated within a municipality unless that municipality has adopted an ordinance allowing the use of low-speed vehicles within its jurisdiction. So that provides the opt-in language that was discussed previously. And we ran the changes by the director of Department of Division of Motor Vehicles, and he was okay with them. So just wanted to present that CS to you.
Okay, very good. And we do have Dwayne Bannock online if there's any questions to him.
This was a suggestion of yours, Representative Hawker. Go ahead, Representative Hawker.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to personally thank Ian and the guy he works for, Representative Thomas, carrying the bill forward. I feel pretty passionately about not stepping on the toes of local governments here, and your willing, accommodation and the technical issues I've greatly appreciated, and my staff also very much appreciated the time you spent, and I think we got a real good work product here.
Okay, very good. Representative Kelly.
And on more thought over the last couple of days, Ian, I've decided not to be your guy that tests this for the 3-year period.
That's just fine.
You had some bad luck with the last alternative fuel. Yeah. Oh, and Representative Stoltz brought donuts. That's great. Mm.
This must have been on silent ring, Mr. Chairman. There's only a half a dozen.
Are you that or just hungry at lunch? Yes, that is a reminder that your cell phone goes off. It can be expensive, so, and also fattening. Okay, so any other questions, comments on electric vehicles? Okay, was there any fiscal notes? Zero fiscal notes. Okay, very good. Anything else? Not
respectfully, sir. Point of
yes. Go ahead.
Information. I believe we do have a positive fiscal note. DMV had a receipt supported services fiscal note on this.
Oh yeah, $10,500. Yes, very good. Thank you, Representative Hawker. All right. Thank you. Okay. Any Representative Foster?
I'll let you go.
No, please.
One Representative Foster is busy, if I might, sir.
Go ahead, Representative Foster.
Mr. Chairman, I would move from committee CS for House Bill number 403 as amended with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations, sir.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, again, thank you, Ian and Representative Thomas and Dwayne Bannock and my staff, Suzanne Cunningham. I know you got all the parties together to make this work. Okay, let's go on now to House Bill 362, increase in base student allocation.
Mr. Jeans, do you want to tell us about this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman and committee members, HB 362 is Governor Murkowski's recommended increase in the base student allocation that affects the foundation funding for public schools in the state. The recommendation is to increase the base student allocation from $4,919 to $5,352. That's a $433 per student increase. And the fiscal note that you will have for the foundation program is approximately $90 million. There's also a fiscal note for the Military Youth Academy because their funding is also tied to the base student allocation. And I hope you have a revised fiscal note. The one that I have is for $607,600. And, Mr. Chairman, the way that the department arrived at the $90 million increase was, first, we looked at the increases in the PERS TERS requirements for school districts, and that was approximately $40 million. We also identified approximately $30 million due to increases in fuel costs, insurance, and other expenses due to inflation. And then the remaining $20 million is to help school districts in meeting state targets and making adequate yearly progress. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Jeans?
I just have one basic question. How did you or the governor's office arrive at the $90 million figure?
I mean, why not more? Why not less? Just
Mr. Chairman, we arrived at the $90 million. Approximately $40 million is identified for PERS TERS increases. About $30 million is due to increased fuel costs, insurance costs, and other costs associated with inflation. And then we earmarked another $20 million to help districts meet adequate yearly progress.
Okay. And in your opinion, do you feel like the $20 million is enough?
Mr. Chairman, we put the $20 million in there as a starting point for this discussion.
Okay, very good. Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of in the same vein of, you know, what's the best way to go about tying this animal down? Did you contemplate looking at a bifurcation and perhaps taking, you know, these energy costs, which are unpredictable, and, you know, we've also, you know, moving them, say, into a direct reimbursement or some other mechanism, you know, maybe even like the old log program on energy reimbursement, so we're taking care of actual costs and the, certainly because costs are, you know, that energy cost factor varies as well as the proportion. It's very different from one part of the state to another. Any thought to breaking that one out and addressing it individually?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, we've had that discussion many times over the years. The thing is we don't control how those costs are incurred. In other words, we don't set the thermostats in the schools. And by just allocating the money through the foundation program, it's discretionary money. It's up to the local school board to determine how to allocate those revenues. And if they're, you would expect that they would keep their utility costs at a minimum. When it's at their discretion. If it becomes a reimbursable system, there's no telling what those energy costs could be.
I can see, if I may, and, you know, this, why this dialogue has gone on forever, but if it keeps going on, you know, as it keeps going on forever, it just seems there's still got to be a, you know, something we're going to have to address, a more innovative way to address this school funding.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hawker. Yeah, I believe Representative Chenault has another way to address the funding that he'll bring up at another time. Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've spent a lot of time in schools, and what the Mattsu Borough School District has gone through some real innovative measures of brought in efficiency experts and done on a they only get paid for cost savings that they incur. And have there been similar efforts in other schools? I know it's tough to react quickly, but I know they've shown it's taken, you know, habit-forming activities within the school personnel. Have similar efforts gone on in other school districts to totally maximize costs?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I know that districts have looked at those, but they've all looked at them from a different aspect. I know, like in Fairbanks, they have sensors so that their lights are on as people are moving through, and their lights go off when people are not moving through. I know in Kodiak, they've actually gone through and replaced all their lighting and ballast systems that have saved them a lot of money. I couldn't tell you exactly what those, I could get that information for you, but I know school districts are looking at ways to reduce energy costs. And in fact, that's part of the preventative maintenance program, is to measure energy costs and to monitor it on an ongoing basis.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Questions, Mr. Jeans? Okay. Seeing none, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's go go on then to public testimony. Looks like here in Juneau we have.
Are you guys going to be coming up together? Is that or okay? Great,
Margo and Andy, Julie, with the Juneau School District.
You would again tell us your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Margo Waring, and I'm with the Juneau School Board. This is Julie Morris, who is also a school board member, and Andy Story, who's also a school board member. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 262, the base student allocation. We are here today as elected members of the Juneau School Board to testify on behalf of the Juneau Board of Education in support of an increase to the student base allocation. The current proposed BSA is 5,352, which unfortunately for Juneau means $2 million in cuts to our budget. We're recommending a base student allocation of 5,552, an increase of $200 to the base student allocation. Or we also support implementation of the proposed district cost factors recommended by the University of Alaska's Institute of Social Economic Research beyond the $90 million. First, we want to underscore the importance of education in our changing state, nation, and world. The most dynamic economies in the world, China and India, are growing because of their investments in infrastructure. The infrastructure they are investing in is education. The United States is now 17th in the world in the number of young Americans receiving science degrees, down from a third three decades ago. There are enormous disparities among Asian and American high schools in achievement levels. The number one factor for student achievement is not class size, but the quality of education, according to the Education Institute. It is important that each state commit to education the resources that will retain and attract highly qualified teachers. It is important that each state commit to programs that offer instruction on best teaching methods and the delivery of those methods. Thank you for funding the Teacher Mentoring Program, which does just that. The U.S. average for teacher salaries grew 31.5% in the decade from school year 1990 to school year 2000. During that same decade, Alaska teachers' average salary grew only 10.9%, last among all states and the District of Columbia. This comes from a report from our own Department of Education. The report also says that the percentage of the Alaska state budget that goes to K through 12 education is now the lowest in the nation.
It's been fortunate to have a community that elects public officials committed to public education. We would like to publicly thank our current assembly and mayor and past elected officials for the tradition of funding to the cap for education in Juneau. However, even this continued support has not been adequate to maintain level support for our schools. Each year, we fall farther behind. How can this be, you may be asking? Simply put, our increased expenditures exceed the increased revenue for the coming year. House Bill 362 proposes $5,352 for the student-based allocation. Again, this translates into $2 million in cuts that our board will need to make to the Juneau School District budget for next year if more revenues are not invested in education. The Alaska Associations of School Boards handed out a letter to the House Finance Committee yesterday with an attached chart. Juneau's shortfall is incorrect on that chart. It should be $2 million, not $1.3 million. The wrong number was taken from our budget worksheet. I have copies of a letter from our superintendent explaining the discrepancy and a copy of the budget worksheet. On the worksheet, you will see a column titled BSA Increase. That column shows what the BSA increase should be to provide for needed services and their costs. The budget worksheet shows how we arrived at the BSA increase we are suggesting for your consideration, which is the $200 more. We want to stress that these cost increases are either beyond our control, such as heating, fuel costs, and workman's compensation, federally mandated, such as special education, or inflationary, not to mention our need to offer salaries that attempt to retain and attract highly qualified teachers. The salary increases for our staff, while costly as a whole, are very modest increases for our staff. It is a 1.5% and 25 cent per hour increase for our support staff, and a 2% increase for teaching staff for next year, in addition to step and column and increased health benefits.
Okay, and then for the record, then you're Andy Story.
Correct.
Okay, if you would, just before you speak, give us your name again.
Sure. I'm Julie Morris, the Juneau School Board. All summer long, we worked on a task force that looked at cost factors. And there were many, many proposals that we looked at. Another way to help meet the needs of the Juneau students, instead of increasing the base, is to adjust the cost factors. And what I mean by saying adjusting is to adopt something that is over the top of what the governor is proposing. That means everybody gets to win. Currently, Juneau receives a 0.005, half a penny more than the base for Anchorage. The most recent study recommends an adjustment of 14.5%. Implementation of even half of that, of the recommended amount, would restore the maintenance level of funding for Juneau schools. I know many other districts face the similar problems. The erosion of purchasing power from the BSA due to the cost differentials that are in place now. To name some is Kenai and Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan. These schools are all hurting. The $90 million that the governor is proposing, almost half of that goes into PERS and TERS. That will never get into the classroom. I really want you to think about that because it's very important. And I appreciate that you're here and that you give us the time to testify, and that I know that you work really hard on behalf of all of Alaskans. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. By the way, Stephanie Allison is next if she wants to come on up. But just let folks know, the intent is not to move this bill today, but obviously as we inch closer to the end of session, we need to start thinking about the funding for this, and we wanted to today get the input and feedback from you all so that we can hopefully come up with a dollar amount here in the near future. So, Stephanie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Stephanie Allison. I've been a Juneau resident for 13 years and an Alaskan resident for 29 years. I graduated from Chugiak High School and have obtained 2 degrees from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I am a certified public accountant. I am very concerned that the base student allocation proposed by the governor is not enough to sufficiently educate our children. In my son's elementary school, the cuts which will occur in the next school year with the current BSA will mean losing a minimum of one teacher, and class sizes will increase. In any elementary school, the loss of a teacher has very real, very visible repercussions. Teachers spend more time managing students and less time teaching. That leads to students not meeting core requirements and not meeting AYP. I feel the loss of a teacher in this school is significant since it's a Title I school, and it is this socioeconomic group that is the most underserved in our education system. It is this socioeconomic group that has the highest dropout rate. It is this socioeconomic group that needs intervention as early as possible, yet class sizes are going to increase. My youngest son will start kindergarten next year. With the current BSA, class sizes for primary grades will average 25 students in a classroom. Just imagine 25 5- and 6-year-olds and one adult. Just getting the entire class to get their shoes on for gym is a 10-minute process. The thought of an outside recess in the middle of winter with 25 snowsuits, 50 boots, and 50 mittens is enough to give most adults a very aching head. My husband and I have made the painful decision to enroll our kindergartner in a private school. I will not put him in a class averaging 25 students. While we have the financial wherewithal to make this decision, most households do not. I am very confident that my sons will receive the education required for them to succeed in their lives, even if I'm forced to make decisions I had never envisioned, like private schools. It is their classmates that concern me. What will happen to those students whose parents are struggling to house, feed, and clothe their children? I suspect that, like their parents, these children will struggle to succeed. They will struggle simply because this state fails to recognize that our greatest assets are our children and fails to provide the funds necessary to adequately educate them. The current BSA leaves the Juneau School District short by $2 million. In order to hold this district harmless, a BSA of approximately $5,600 would be necessary. Alternatively, a 50% implementation of the ICER district cost factors with the governor's proposed BSA of $5,352 would also eliminate the necessity of increasing class sizes. Ironically, postponing this meeting provided me the time I did not have to bake several dozen brownies for my son's school for his bake sale and garage sale this weekend. The proceeds of this sale will supplement classroom supplies, which are increasing and the revenues decreasing, and the proceeds will be used for Glacier Valley's 100% fundraised weekly art program, the only weekly art program in this district at the elementary level. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, John Ringstead from Fairbanks, Fairbanks School District.
Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Ringstead. I represent the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. My testimony will be appropriately lengthened to the length of your bill. The district, Fairbanks, supports this bill. We appreciate the effort and the work and the funding you have put into education and continue to do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. Thank you for your testimony. Mary Francis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Francis. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. I come before you once again to talk about school funding. At the time that the governor's proposal was rolled out, most administrators, school administrators in the state had not had an opportunity to see what the actual impact of the number would be. And I'm sure you can recall and are hearing from your constituents that school district after school district are having difficulty keeping their programs in place at the 90 million and therefore this BSA number. I think the important thing is that as people are preparing their budgets, you're hearing shortfalls everywhere. I don't think there are many school districts that aren't having problems with trying to sustain the programs that we were able to put back into place through your generous contributions of previous years. We had many years of flat funding. We have had a couple of years of resurrection and restoration. We want to see that momentum continue, and so we would urge you to consider a larger BSA. My association does not have a number to recommend, but we do know that at this value of the BSA, that districts are still struggling to maintain the progress that they've made. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Francis? No questions. Thank you very, very much. Mary Hecala. I'm going to go ahead and just go down the list here of people here in Juneau, and then we'll go online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Mary Hecala. I'm speaking for myself, my three children in Alaska's public schools, and also I'm lead in a grassroots, nonpartisan network of citizens who are very supportive of public schools and want to see great schools in Alaska. We're statewide. Our base is in Juneau, and our biggest group is in Juneau, but we have links across the state. And as you know, it's something that concerns parents everywhere. It's a lot for a parent to speak up. A lot of parents have concerns, but then to take that concern and take it to the political process is a huge leap forward. Not only is education a massive subject, it's formidable. There might be concerns, but who's got the answers? It's a tough one to tackle. And then to then voice that to you, I hope you hear the words that you do get from your constituents. I believe they're the tip of the iceberg. Also, recently I've heard the words, keep your eyes on the prize. I believe those are the governor's words. You know, for some, this is the gas line. And for me, it's my children. And it's the future potential of this state, which rests in the youth of this state. I believe that's the true prize. That's where a hearty investment is needed. The gas line is likely to sustain the state economically, but it's today's students who will sustain and catapult this state into the future. And at a time when the state has a surplus of revenue, we do look to you to first and foremost ensure that there are not cuts to school programs. There has been a continuous squeeze for many, many years. So first, our request is that you not cut what is left. And then second, allow for room for improvement. Local control works. In Juneau, we see it. There's a great deal of public scrutiny of the budget. People are trying to stretch the dollars as far as they can. And I just want to bring you to the sheet that's distributed. I gave you a very similar one in the past. The other day, I walked into a middle school classroom, Santa Kahini. Current year, the class sizes have been reduced to 30, average. You know, you walk into that classroom, it was packed. You could not walk from one end of the classroom to the other, and it smelled like a locker room. You know, that is going to go up unless the base student allocation or area cost differentials are amended. Juneau, $2 million in cut, that's going to take that class size to 31 or 32 average. Again, we will lose the inroads that have been made on early elementary grades. I wish I'd brought a copy of my son's advanced biology textbook. It's 15 years old. A lot has happened in the biologic sciences over the last 15 years. Now, he's got a good teacher. They bring other resources in. His math textbook is duct taped together. The newest book I could find was 10 years old. This is just an example. Those are the kind of expenses that have been forestalled because choices have been made to put classroom teachers in place. The cuts are real, the cuts are deep. It's not just the glamorous things that are being proposed to be cut in Juneau schools. It's central office. There are no easy cuts to be made. As a citizen looking at it, scrutinizing it, I believe that. I don't always agree with everything they do, but also coupled with that, Juneau is one of the few communities that's still at the cap. How long can Juneau stay at the cap? I don't know. The community has been tremendously supportive, but property taxes are high, and you can't expect the community to keep having that escalate. I outline at the end what level of funding will keep Juneau schools whole. Now, we don't know what will keep all schools whole, and our network is statewide. And we've attempted to try to gather some of that data together. But my perception is that approximately this much money of $150 million is needed one way or the other, one strategy or another, to keep schools whole across Alaska. Not 90, 150. Now, in the realm of things, it's huge, yet it's not that much in the context of the revenue discussions that are ongoing. I believe the state can sustain it and is going to have to sustain it. One thing I also like to point out, some have questioned the need for COLA, and I will make this available to the committee. We did some research. The federal government is changing its COLAs in Alaska. And it validates the need for adjustments. In the past, the federal rates have been uniformly 25%, and they are now changing them. There is a long phase-in period since they can only change one percentage point a year, but their study concluded that Anchorage would be at 14%, Fairbanks at 16%, Juneau at 18%, and the rest of Alaska at 25%. I just offer that as, again, tangible evidence from a very different source of that if you compare it to existing cost differentials, things are very much out of whack. And I will just conclude, thank you for the minutes. Back in the fall, there's a group called Morgan Whitno who publishes some really fun smartest state awards, best most livable state awards. Their most livable state award just came out, and it places Alaska at number 23. Education is one of the component elements, and it's fun to look through, and I'll try to make that available. But on the smartest state award, they compile statistics. The smartest state award recognizes those states that are committed to students and teachers, emphasize excellence in the classroom, and ensure that public elementary and secondary schools are efficiently run. Vermont was named the nation's smartest state. Alaska is number 44. With Alaska's wealth, we should be in the top 10 at least. And I urge you to make the resources available and targeted if need be, but make the resources available so that schools can really do their jobs well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mary. And Mary, as a parent who has kids in the Anchorage School District half the year and Juneau School District the other half, I will admit that you do a good job of, the school district does a good job in the public of taking care of your schools with the money you have, so good job. Okay, Cindy Spenyers.
Good afternoon. Hey, and I should probably tell you that I do work for the Alaska Public Employees Association, which is affiliated with AFT. We represent school districts in Petersburg, Juneau, Valdez, and Anchorage. But I'm really here today in front of you as a parent. I'm the mother of an 8.5-year-old boy. He goes to third grade at Auk Bay. Every year about this time, we and the students and the staff become a little bit anxiety-stricken, worried about whether or not a program will be continued next year, whether or not the paraprofessional will still be in the classroom to help out. We are counting on you to help make schools a more healthy place, to increase the base student allocation to alleviate that anxiety and continue the programs that we do have. This morning, when you first scheduled the hearing, my husband happened to be at Auk Bay at the reading club. There are more than 25 kids in my son's class of all different ranges of reading abilities. And so every Friday morning, parents come in to help out and split up the kids into groups. Like many schools in the Juneau School District, our school is very active with parental help, with parents and children doing everything from selling pansies to baked goods to maintain an adequate supply of school supplies. But again, I do thank the Juneau School District members, the school board members who came before here, and the parents that have spoken before me. They've really given many more hours than my husband and I have. It all makes it work out, and I hope that we can work together to improve this number. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Cindy. Okay, I'm going to go... I'm going to go offline now. I just received a note that we have one person that's got a time constraint, so we'll go ahead and accommodate
her. Deborah Germano in Homer? Germano, excuse me.
Good afternoon. My name is Deb Germano. I live here in Homer. I'm a resident of Homer, but I'll give you a little background of my other involvement. I've spent 10 years on the school board on the Kenai Peninsula, and currently I'm a member of the Borough Assembly. That's my ethics disclaimer. But I really truly am here as a parent today that has been involved for many years. My children have finished school, but I'm really concerned about the direction that we're going. While I really appreciate this base allocation increase that's been proposed by the governor, as everyone else has stated before, it really is not enough. At this point in time, though, I'd be willing to, I'm actually very hopeful that you all will take a look at the cost basis for these schools in the state, because this school district has, as you well know, been severely hurt. I wanted to comment particularly on Representative Hawker's thoughts about direct funding fuel costs and ask you guys to take a look back at when that happened with transportation, the direct costs were tied to that year of the direct costs, yet the costs have continued to increase, which, as you well know from doing your own budget in the state, that's the way it works. And so currently, almost $1 million in operating money in this district is going to support transportation. So while it seems like a good idea, these things do catch up with you. And in this district, we only have one half-time person that's a transportation coordinator. So when you look at real costs and you look at a district like the Kenai that has done just about everything you can possibly do to try to contain costs and get as many people in the classrooms as possible, we're once again hurt by these things of, just pay what the actual expense is, because we have tried to be responsible. Certainly there's always room for improvement, but when we have to adopt math curriculum and then not buy the books, this is a problem. And my final comments about this are really to ask you guys to take a look at what this increase actually means. When I look at it, and this is really rough, I look at $1 million would be our additional, or $1.5 million would be additional money to the district. But in that $1.5 million is transportation increases, salary, they're negotiating a contract this year, health insurance, which we all know is a crisis that we really, all of us, are going to need to deal with someday, somehow, some way. But this district has cut administration, principals and buildings. We've got principals that are handling 2 and 3 and 4 buildings and teaching principals and you name it. There's no kindergarten assistants. There's no assistant principals. It's bare bones operation, folks. And this school district here has had a great year this year because last year on the school board we said we don't even have much of a fund balance because we said we've got to get these people in the classrooms as many as we can at you know, we'll use the reserves. These kids are going to march on and we'll have money in the bank and whoopee. So to keep where we are in this school district right now this year, I think educationally was the best year from what I'm hearing from talking to parents and staff. It's been the best year ever. Well, next year their proposal the school board sent on was currently to cut 70 teachers again from this district. Folks, we need some help here. We need some real help, and I'm asking you to, as you look at things, don't just look at those direct costs. Look at because there's so much disparity there in what people have and what people don't have. And those are my final comments, and I really appreciate you taking, putting me on the list so that I could testify today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Deborah. Mr. Jeans, was that your phone?
Okay. All right. I think it was John Walsh's.
Okay. We'll now go to Anchorage, where we have Bill Bezork. It's not said like it looks here, Bill. Sorry about that.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair, Representative Meyer, and distinguished members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Bill Bezork. I'm the president of NEA Alaska, and we represent the 13,000 teachers and education support professionals who staff the schools of Alaska. In my job, I get to visit many of the schools around Alaska, and I can tell you from getting out to the schools need your help, and they can't wait much longer for it. I'd like to just approach the governor's request and say, you know, we appreciate the governor starting the conversation on school funding. We're a little dismayed that we're nearly at the 90th day of this legislature before we get to talk about it openly and in public, because school district budgets are being developed and personnel decisions are being made. You heard Deb Germano talk about the Kenai school district and the drastic cuts that Kenai is going to have to do unless they get some relief from you. But the governor's numbers of $90 million really equates to, with $40 million going into the increased employer contributions to PERS and TERS, and about $30 million to address inflation, leaves $20 left to address all of the education needs in K-12 schools across this great state. The $20 million, folks, is just simply spread too thin to meet the needs of all the schools. You've seen empirical evidence about what this will do to the schools in Alaska. It's the layoffs in the Kenai, the layoffs in the Valley, in that changeover, and the shortfalls in budgets that have already been projected in Juneau and in Anchorage. We look to the House of Representatives for leadership on this key issue, and we also look to see how the 24th legislature has done on school funding. Because, frankly, folks, it's been a checkered history here of the 24th legislature. In the first session of the legislature, the House passed its bill early, sent it over to the Senate, only to have it be held, as was described in the media, at hostage with the retirement bill through the end of the session. No real discussion happened during that first session, and schools suffered. And here we are approaching the 90th day of the second session of the 24th legislature, and we're having our first conversations today. But it's not too late, folks. We think that the House of Representatives can show leadership and really lead in a direction that the state needs you to take us to address this constitutionally mandated requirement of state government to offer quality K-12 schools. K-12 schools are really hurt right now because of the exact same issues that brought high revenues to the state. And it's the high cost of oil and incumbent impact on energy costs. It's heating our schools, it's driving our kids to school, and then you increase delivery charges for everything that goes along with the schools. I mean, schools are feeling a crunch of high textbook costs, and some of that is just shipping those textbooks to the schools. We need your help on this issue. A member of the committee asked, is there a better way to fund schools? And I couldn't tell from the voice, but I thought it was possibly Representative Hawker, so I apologize if I've got that wrong. There is a better way to fund schools. First thing we do is we find out what it costs. We know how to do that. It's been well defined. You know, and it's really straightforward. It's how much money does it take for these schools to have the kids meet the standards that are set out in regulation for the great state of Alaska. We know how to do this. It isn't difficult. It ought not be political. We hope, folks, that the House Finance Committee will look at K-12 education as the number one resource development issue in this state and invest in Alaska schools. This investment in Alaska schools will pay us dividends for our entire lives and for the future of Alaska. We need more money in the schools of Alaska. NEA Alaska is recommending a base student allocation of $5,611. That would be an increase of approximately $145 million, or $55 million over the governor's suggestion. And there's a variety of ways to get money out into the schools. Certainly the area cost differential would be one way to get money there, because you have some schools that are poster children for the impact of the current way we fund schools. And the Kenai School District is one poster child. That school district, and I've been in the schools on the Kenai this year, that school district has cut everything, and now they're cutting 70 more teachers. And that means still larger class sizes. In schools that virtually were not built to house that many kids in a room, Alaska can do better. I know that the House of Representatives can do better. We're counting on you to address Alaska K-12 education. Thank you very much, Chair Meyer.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Okay. Moving on now to Harlan Harmon, Northwest Arctic Borough School District.
Good afternoon, Chairman and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify at this time on something that's very near and dear to our district's heart, is the BSA level. I'd like to thank you for your consideration of the 55-52 level. That's necessary just to meet what we need to have for this forthcoming year. There's no extras, no special things. The thing of it is there are undetermined costs we still don't know about that we're awfully afraid that we're not going to be able to meet and we'll need to look at real hard in the May-June timeframe. One of this is medical costs. Another is insurance costs. While Mr. Jeans alluded to that a lot of this was for inflation, is that I don't think $20 million is going to be adequate to cover all the inflationary items. Medical cost is probably the one cost that we have to provide medical cost or coverage for our employees. That's not being adequately addressed on any level in the state that I can see. I would encourage a consideration of above the 352, whether that's with the adoption of the ISER study area cost differential, but we do need something over the $90 million level. We're just starting now to catch up with the underfunding that we've had in prior years where we were not even meeting the cost of inflation. My primary concern is that in order for us to meet all the mandates that have come down with No Child Left Behind, with the increased quality of folks that we want to put in the classroom, that increased quality, the highly qualified people Everybody wants those, and they come with a price tag. So if I want a highly qualified math teacher or a highly qualified science teacher, I'm, so to speak, in a bidding war to bring that person here. Is I've got to be able to find the funds in order to provide to people to meet the high quality, as well as make sure our paraprofessionals meet the high qualifications that they're going to be added to. All of that which you have to compensate people that wish to invest in themselves. So I can only encourage the committee, the House representative, and the state legislature to make an appropriate investment above the 53-52 level in Alaska's education. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Harlan. Okay, next we're going to the Mat-Su School Board. And all I have, I think, is a first name or last name.
Sarah Wilton.
Sarah Wilton. Okay, Representative Stoltz, help me out. Sarah Wilton.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sarah Wilton, president of the Mat-Su Borough School Board. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you. Mat-Su Borough is growing. We are the fastest growing area of the state. It is projected that we will have 584 new students for the next school year. And if you can imagine, that is the size of a large elementary school. The school board is appreciative of the money that has been allocated for education. We do thank you for all your considerations. The increases in cost of doing business are continuing to rise. I was just notified this morning of the increase that is projected in our health care benefits. The district had budgeted for 14% increase. We are now told that it's closer to 27%. The district respectfully requests that there be an increase in the base student allocation above the governor's number of $90 million. $90 million represents for the Mat-Su $6 million in cuts. The TERS and PERS impact is staggering. The district's obligation has risen to over $4 million, and it's approximately the cost of 80 teachers with salaries and benefits. These 80 teachers could be teaching 25 students per classroom, and that translates to 2,000 students. We are expecting over 16,000 students in our district next year. We know that smaller class sizes, especially in the early grades, is the key to better education. We know that our students in the high schools need to have more class selections, such as foreign languages, to broaden their educational knowledge base and prepare for the global society. We have a need to increase our vocational technical education programs, as well as our advanced placement options and opportunities for students to take higher level courses. Materials and supplies that were $200 per student in 2003 when I first came on the school board have been cut in the last several years to $100 per student. While we have very talented people who can teach with little support, there comes a point when we do need some books and we need charts and maps and technology. Other impacts on our district are the issues of the special education intensive funding, which, if the district loses its appeal of the audit that was just recently done, it translates into a total cost of approximately $5.8 million. This is lost revenue for the district that has already been counted upon in the preparation budget. As for the school district, it has put in the measures to reduce consumption of energy and is seeing very positive results, as Representative Colson mentioned. At the same time, our costs have risen. The district has outsourced a portion of its workforce to reduce the costs. And other cost-saving measures are being considered, including reducing administrative staffing, although the district's central administration is one of the leanest in the state, averaging the last few years 4% of the total budget. I thank you for your attention, and I'm looking forward to meeting with some of you at the end of this month when I come down for the school board fly-in. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Sarah. And we look forward to seeing you when you're down here. Rob Wells, also at the Mat-Su School Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. I'm in my ninth year on the Mat-Su School Board, and this continues to be a challenging budget year. As Sarah said previously, our enrollment will go over 16,000 next year, making us the second largest school district in the state, with an increase of approximately 580 students. We appreciate the governor's opening position of $90 million in the formula. However, we would concur with the numbers that other people have testified to today in terms of increases. Be specific about the increases in next year's budget for our district. It is $4.4 million in the teacher's retirement, over $4.1 million in contract increases, over $2.5 million in health insurance, which, as Sarah said, now today we find out may be much higher, $1.8 million in new staff, $800,000 to open a new elementary school, $750,000 in fixed costs, and over $1 million in special education. We are facing for the first time in this borough a tax cap that was adopted by the assembly last year, and we are still trying to find out what kind of room they'll have to assist us also. But I would suggest and hope that members of the committee would favorably on a municipal assistance and revenue sharing bill that can be funded over a period, because if our borough has additional funds, they'll have the capabilities to hopefully assist the local district more. The final thing I'd say is I know you're working on the cost factor, the ICER study. We too are interested in resolution of that this year, and hope to find out more about the direction that's taking, and hope that it can be adopted for all districts across the state this year. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Thank you for your testimony. Now we'll go to Valdez. Doug Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the chance to speak to you guys, and we appreciate all the hard work you put in down there. At 5352, at the governor's proposal on this, I'd just let you know where Valdez would end up on this. Would be $700,000 short on our budget. We'll be laying off 10% of our teaching staff, six teachers, laying off five classified. We'll be, at that point, probably cutting about $100,000 out of the activity budget, where we'll either be outsourcing some sports or trying to raise it in the community. And this is a district that I know a lot of people down there think has always had the money, and we have always had the support of our city. They fund us to the cap and beyond. It's to the point now, when we look at things on here, it just can't keep going forward like this. We're up to 25 kids in classrooms at the elementary now. We're going down the different things, and of course it's the same thing that everybody else has. It's the high fuel costs, it's our PERS and TERS, and everything else. But we also have had something else to deal with in the last few years, in which another probably, I think, 13 districts or more might have, and you'd have to ask Mr. James for the number on this, and that's Senate Bill 36 and the eroding floor. Last year, when you guys gave us the extra money, as it came out because of the eroding floor on there, we lost $148,000. Now, when you roll the PERS and TERS in to the dollar figure, it's a good thing, but to go ahead and get a fix for that when you guys do that really does hurt some of the districts and hurts them quite bad. Mr. Eddie Jeans had mentioned that, you know, trying to figure out how to go ahead and with the electrical and the fuel costs and things like that, and that the state does not control it, and I will agree with that. But I will tell you, over the last 5 to 6 years here in our district, and we have all the numbers on this, we have constantly gone down in the number of kilowatt hours that we use in our buildings. We have constantly gone down in the number of gallons of fuel oil that we use on there. And I can tell you right now, as of March 31st, for what we budgeted for last year, we are $57,000 beyond what our budgeted money was for electric and fuel. And we still got a quarter of a year left to go. So it is a real problem for a lot of the districts. It's not that, you know, people are going out and doing the extra things here. Yes, 5352. Like I said, we're going to be $700,000 short. We're going to be laying off non-tenured teachers, and I hate to see that happen. I hate to see young people that are coming in that have, in cases, a couple cases, paid their dues, done their, they've been the substitute teachers here in the district. They've done it for 3-4 years. They've finally gotten where they can get in the classroom through attrition, and we have not been replacing everybody that we've been going through. As it stands, at this kind of money right now, it's going to be pretty devastating down here. And there's not much room that we can go to our city to go beyond on anything. They fund us to the cap, and beyond, to be honest with you. I'm just hoping that you guys can look at this, find some way of pulling up some other money, whether it be taking the $90 million that the governor is recommending and maybe taking care of the PERS and TERS outside that. Or the ICER are following one of the studies. But we appreciate what you're doing, but 5352 is just not going to cut it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Doug. Okay, now we'll go to Rangel.
And Susan, let's see if I do this one. C. Abrasi. C. Abrasi?
Help me out, Susan. Susan, after saying that name, you got to be with us. Is she not with us? Okay. Hello, Susan. She's online, but she might have walked away. Okay. Well, let me ask if there's anyone else here in Juneau who wanted to testify that maybe did not get signed up. Okay. Seeing none. Actually, Susan was the last one on the list here.
Hi, here.
Hello?
Hello, Susan.
Yes.
Susan, pronounce your last name for me, please.
It's Shabarasi.
Wow. That went in close.
I'll give you a pass on that.
I was going to put it phonetically, but it just it didn't come across.
I don't know French. They didn't teach that in my school. Probably because we didn't have money for our school. Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Yes, I'm the superintendent of schools in Wrangell, and first I want to thank you for this opportunity. When the school districts developed their school budgets for next year, they budgeted them using the governor's proposed base student allocation increase of $90.2 million. However, unfortunately, the districts are still having to make huge cuts. And from the information that I've received, the hardest hit districts this coming year are Kenai, Valdez, and Wrangell. And each of those are cutting an equivalent of 6% from their current budgets. This is a large portion when considering the cuts have been made over the last past several years. In Wrangell, we have cut many programs, 30% of the staff, 30% of admin, supplies and equipment from the classrooms, and we've also had an increase of 100% in our fuel. In 1998, Senate Bill 36 initiated a means for school districts to be funded both adequately and equitably. The base student allocation would reflect an amount per student to adequately fund a child in Alaska. Equity issues were addressed through the area cost differential. While the governor's proposed increase from 49.19 to 53.52 may be an adequate number, I don't feel that it is an equitable one in relation to the area cost differential. Specifically, schools in Senate District A, Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, and Ketchikan, are the only school districts in the state that have not received an area cost differential with the current district cost factors. Senate Bill 36 required the updating and monitoring of the district cost factors. However, that has not happened, and many school districts like Wrangell have been cutting for the past 7 years. In July of 2004, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee contracted with ICER to update and modify the previously determined flawed AIR district cost study. Anchorage will still remain at 1.0 because they are the base in which to determine the equality. However, adequacy must be met and then the adjustment for equity. House Bill 362 addresses adequacy and would hold Anchorage harmless. However, in order to also meet equity, it should be in conjunction with the implementation of the district cost factors determined by the ICER study. If only one of those is updated, as is currently proposed in House Bill 362, then the directive from Senate Bill 36 in 1998 is not being fully met. Again, I would like to reiterate that even with the proposed $90.2 million to the base student allocation, districts are experiencing large deficits up to 6%. Therefore, I urge you to accept not only the proposed $90.2 million, but also fully implement the new district cost factors. Only then will both adequacy and equity be met for all of Alaska's children. Thank you for your time and consideration.
And thank you, Susan. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify? Hearing none, is there anyone else in Juneau would like to testify? Mr. Speaker, would you like to testify?
What do you want me to talk about?
HB 362, if you'd like.
Is this cost differential or what?
State student allocation.
Oh, okay.
So far.
Yeah,
I don't know. With that, if there's nobody here in Juneau, we'll close public testimony and we will go to, I think it's the intention of the chairman to move this bill today, but if there's any comments from the members, if not, I have a couple of comments of my own.
I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Okay, great. I love it. I haven't introduced this yet, but I do have an amendment for this bill. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've been working on for, well, I don't know, I think ever since I got out here, and that was probably 6 years ago. And it does deal with the costs, school cost differential. It seems that everywhere I turn that there's a roadblock, and you know, there's been a lot of good comments today, and I probably can't, Susan explained it very well, and I probably can't top what she said, but I start looking at the effects of not addressing the cost differential and what it does to school districts all over the state, not only my own, but other districts. And I have seen what effects it has in my district. You know, and I could go through a myriad of, as others have talked about, how many teachers we're going to lose. We can talk about why, you know, some of these school districts may be losing students. We may talk about whether fuel costs are higher. We may talk about, maybe they leave their lights on too long. But I'll argue with anybody that the cost of keeping a school open in some villages, for instance, is considerably cheaper if we keep those kids in a school and in the right surroundings versus having them out maybe drinking. And this is not just in villages, but this anywhere in the state. The longer we can keep them in a surrounding where they're learning or they're excelling in sports, I'm willing to pay that cost personally. I don't care what the difference is in fuel costs. I would grant that there's probably not a school out there that runs their heater at 90 degrees and leaves the door wide open because they know they can come back to the state and get more money. I don't think there's a school out there. And, you know, I've proposed a lot of, and I've looked at a lot of different options. Eddie can, I've pulled most of my hair out of the back of my head. I'm probably going to start on the front here pretty shortly. But
be careful about that.
That's the only one that scares me, Mr. Speaker. Is that I might grow up to be like you.
There you go. Grow out to be like me.
And, you know, I've looked at different ways to enact this. Certainly, it is not my intention, it has never been my intention to hurt any school district in this state, whether it be Anchorage, the Mat Valley, Fairbanks, any of them. It has never been my intention. What has been my intention is to make this a fair funding system for the state. In 98, when SB 36 was enacted, DED, there was a place in there that said that they would go back and look for inequities and make those adjustments. We've never made an adjustment. What we've done is we've continued to add to the base. And every dollar that we add to the base widens the gap between the districts that are short in the cost factor and those that are not. or those that don't feel that they are.
I see.
And so you continue to widen that gap, and it doesn't do anything except make the problem worse. Now, while I like the $90 million, personally, I'd like more, personally. But I would rather give up part of the $90 million to fix the differential across the state. Now, I haven't proposed that, guys, so don't get real excited. Well, I have an amendment, and whatever the co-chair decides, he wants to take this bill up, but what I have is an amendment. It's not near what I would like to see, but I think it's something that so far we have a good base on this side anyway. Whether we do on the other body, I can't tell you, but would be an increase of a quarter of the ICER study. Now, there will be arguments about the ICER study. One side is they didn't study what we wanted. The numbers are too high. And so let's throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. And I say that while I don't know what that number is, I know that there's a discrepancy there. And I'm willing to start by saying it's at least 25% of the ICER study. I'm willing to work, continue to work with any member in this body to try to come up with what we consider the right numbers. But I would be willing to bet at the end of the day, 60 of us cannot agree that this is the number or that is the number. And so while it's frustrating, I think that we've got to make a move to bring the funding equity issue more in line. I'm going to propose right now, I'm going to propose a 25% increase to the cost factors, which would be about a $24 million increase on top of the $90 million. It doesn't fix my district's problem. I'll probably have half the people in my district screaming at me as soon as they hear this that it's not enough. But we've got to make forward motion. We can't take and continue to tell kids and parents and teachers in the districts around the state that we don't care or that we don't want to fix the problem. I have, whether we want to fix it or don't want to fix it, we've got to address the problem. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, that'll be my amendment whenever you get to amending. I'd like to hear comments from other members. As I stated, the cost differential, if you look at it, even enacting 25% of it, it helps every district in the state.
Except one. And that's yours.
I don't.
And, the only way we help your district is to add more money into the base, student allocation. And I'm agreeable to that because my district continues to get a piece of that. But I'm not agreeable to continue to fund the student base allocation without addressing the cost differential. And I appreciate you allowing me the time to speak.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Chenault. Welcome to Speaker Harris. I think Representative Chenault is, or Co-Chairman Chenault here is just giving you a prelude of the difficulties we have here dealing with the base student allocation. I don't think there's anyone here that doesn't agree that there should be some sort of cost differential addition to this amount. But the way that it's set up, if we do that, then the largest school district, which is the one that I represent, gets nothing as far as the cost differential goes. And maybe that does include looking at the base and bumping that up a little bit too, so that then the largest school district would also benefit. But this is some of the discussion that we want to have with you, the public, and I appreciate those of you who did come out today. I was actually expecting a little bit more, but a lot of you, a lot of folks have sent us emails and certainly have sent us faxes and phone calls, and we've talked to you and when we go back to our districts. Representative Kelly.
Just, Mr. Chairman, to Chair Chenault, have you,
last year when this came up, we looked at possibly capping some of the real outliers on the upper end of that. That may be, you know, this would just track them on up as well, whether it's 2 bits or the full dollar. Have you looked at that, or would you be willing to look at that between now and next time?
Well, I'm willing to look at it. I'm not willing to give up on the 25%. I think we need to enact it. And I'm willing to try to undertake another study, if that's what it takes, and try to define, before we actually go out for a study, try to sit down and try to define what we want. Not the number that we want, but what should be included in there. Because what we've done in the last two studies is we've told them kind of what we wanted, and they've came back with numbers, and we didn't like the numbers. And so, as a consequence, those two studies died.
Go ahead.
Just in some of the areas, particularly the areas that it's harder to find teachers, mm-hmm. the economics go into the reverse zone of making any sense sometimes. I mean, employment here, and then we're going to raise unemployment, here, very high unemployment rates, and we're going to raise the bar so we can get somebody in. And in some of those cases where we are having that problem, the base problem is not necessarily that just keep running that number up. And I think that I'd just like to ask you to look at that between. Yeah,
and we will look at it. Representative Hawker earlier spoke about trying to do fuel outside, maybe do it as I called it a FOG earlier in the year, fuel opportunity grant, instead of a log. But we did look at that. We've looked at trying to fund fuel inside or outside the formula, try to fund
Hurst-Tours
inside, outside the formula, and look and see what difference does it make. You know, does it move the numbers? Sure, it moves the numbers. But then you have winners and you have losers. And you definitely have losers. We're not losing anything, we're just not gaining. You definitely have losers. And so, you know, trying to formulate some kind of plan. I think at one time I had 9 or 11 different scenarios on my desk of different options. Different rates, different options, trying to come up with that information. And you had winners and losers in almost every one of those. So, no, I'm willing to work on it. I don't have anything to do, but I don't have anything but time. My district cannot continue to be underfunded. And fortunately, my district has went up and beyond the call on a lot of different issues, and it funded to the cap. Now, we're in a position this year where they're saying that we're not going to fund, but I'll be pushing my district, my borough, to fund to the cap. These school districts my schools cannot continue to go the direction that they're going. We talk about assistant kindergarten assistance, things like that. My district hadn't had those for years. Well, they have, but they're called parents. Mm-hmm. And the parents go into the school and they assist these kindergarten teachers. You know, there's lots of other issues, and I don't want to say your school's better than mine or mine's better than yours, but the issue is the cost differential, because we haven't changed it since 98. That's where most of the inequity comes in. And I'm at a point where we need to make a difference.
All right. Very good. Appreciate those comments, Co-Chairman Schnault, and appreciate your presence, Speaker Harris. I know this is a important issue to you and to the whole House, as far as that goes. And, it's something that we take very seriously, and as I said, we'll have more discussion on. So with that, let's go ahead. We'll anxiously await your amendment, Co-Chairman Schnault. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and move set that bill aside. And it looks like we do have time yet.
So let's finish up House Bill 51, which is workers' comp. Speaker Harris, you're welcome to stay with us if you want to hear about workers' comp. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on the school allocation.
Mr. Chairman, if I could say one other thing. I sure hate to make your short little bill, half a page bill, 3 pages long. But,
that's fine.
That's what it takes to make it right.
All right. Thank you, Co-Chairman. No. Okay, where we left off, and we did try to call Linda Hall. I'm not bringing this bill up.
She's in flight.
She's in flight. Okay, good. Mr. Pulaski, if you'd come up, please. Okay, again, hopefully everybody has House Bill 51 in front of them. This is the bill we were not able to finish this morning. I know you've been working with the director on some of these amendments, as well as, well, I'll tell you what, I'll move Amendment 1 and hopefully we'll have an objection. Objected to Amendment 1. Mr. Pulaski, if you can tell us what Amendment 1 does and how it evolves.
For the record, my name is Michael Pulaski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. Amendment 1 is on page 2, line 11, following AS 2330. The dilemma here was clarification of the joint and several liability language that was contained in the bill. In the CS, members of the Association of Employers are liable to secure payment of all compensation due to the members' employees. However, what the amendment adds is and the solvency of the association, the key being that beyond just the members' obligations, also the solvency of the association needs to be preserved in that joint and several liability provision. It's just a clarification and strengthening of the joint and several liability.
Okay. Any questions? Objection maintained?
Withdraw my objection.
Okay, Amendment 1 passes. Okay, let's go on to Amendment 2. I'll move that. Somebody object?
Object.
Okay. Ms. Bosk.
Mr. Chairman, Amendment Number 2 is to page 5, line 27. This had to do with some of the concerns about assessments and that there was a limit in size on the downside and at least a minimum threshold in the aggregate. So an individual company would have to have a minimum assessment of $10,000 a year, and the group as a whole would have to collect at least $300,000 a year in order to qualify for a certificate of self-insurance. This will indeed push some of the smaller companies out of the possibility of joining one of these associations. However, in talking to the groups that have sponsored the idea, the concern being that when you're signing a joint and several liability agreement and putting your assets on the line, there is an appropriate level that they're not even sure they would like to have a company that small in there in the first place. To put it in perspective, some of the groups that as an individual company have testified in previous committee hearings, I have discussed that their workers' compensation premiums are around $300,000 at least annually. So you get four or five of those companies together, you've got about $1.5 million in premium. So they're not concerned about this amendment. We agreed with Director Hall that it provides some good sideboards on companies that could be allowed into the association, and that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Barber.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any problem with the first part of the amendment. My comp rates are less than $10,000 annually, and it would drive me out of this, so I would just stick with a regular comp carrier. So I see the benefits of this. I guess the problem I have with the amendment is the second part where it deletes all material, and I would actually leave that in the second one and say, or an amount necessary to maintain the solvency of the association, because it seems like you've got a floor now, 300 in the aggregate or not less than $10,000, but you still have an assured solvency.
So if you collect that amount, you're really identifying that there has to be cash in the system to pay the claim, which addresses the testimony. But also by deleting the second part of this amendment and saying, or in an amount necessary to maintain the solvency of the association, then the department still has the discretion to determine if that floor is appropriate or not, and can come back and say, you know, you still are not solvent given the pool of potential claimants out there in your comp claims. So that's my only concern about the amendment. But I think the guidance in the first part of the amendment is well-founded.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wybach through the chair, that, I believe, is correct, is a good change to the amendment, and it would be consistent with language throughout the rest of the bill about maintaining solvency.
So may I, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would amend amendment number 2 to delete lines 4, 5, and 6. I beg your pardon, to delete line 5 and 6.
Okay.
Okay.
Any objection to amending the amendment?
But that. I'm not done yet. And then on page 5, line 28, add the word or in front of the word in.
Gotcha.
The amendment would be to remove lines 5 and 6 of the amendment, but to insert the word or in front of in on line 28.
Okay. Very good. So is there an objection to amending the amendment as was read? I agree. I think that improves the amendment. Okay, so now we have the amendment as amended back before us. Any other questions or suggestions?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman.
Or in.
Okay.
You're okay?
I've got nothing on that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Very good. Is the objection maintained? I think that was Representative Kelly.
I withdraw the objection.
Okay. And Amendment 2 as amended is accepted. Amendment 3.
Amendment 3, Mr. Chairman.
We need an objection. You want to object?
We'll move it first.
I'll move Amendment 3.
I'll object.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Colossi.
Amendment 3, Mr. Chairman, is jumping the gun on something that is going on, as we understand from testimony in the Department of Labor right now, as it relates to single self-insureds, that the $5 million floor in the aggregate for a single self-insured is being changed and has not been kept up to date with inflation. What this amendment would do is go throughout the bill, and everywhere that $5 million floor is in the bill, it would change it to $10 million. And that's to reflect testimony that the Department of Labor has given in previous committees, and I believe in this committee this morning, that number needs to be updated. Originally, the entire view had been that this would be done in regulation, but as we've been asked to include things in statute, we've consistently included them. It would, again, raise the floor and the threshold that companies have to get together to meet, but it'll provide for a stronger organization.
Comments? Objection?
Yes, go ahead. Just a question. What would that number inflated from when it was inserted be? Do you know roughly?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I don't.
Maybe if you talk, when was it inserted?
I would ask, actually, Director Lysenki to respond to that, but I believe it's well over 20 years. So even at 3%, you're looking at a doubling.
That takes care of my concern.
I think that was the testimony.
Withdraw my objection.
All right. Okay, so Amendment 3 passes. Amendment 4, I'll move Amendment 4. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, Amendment 4 is trying to accomplish something that Mr. Vogel testified to and Director Hall testified to, and that was that the actual processing of claims be taken care of by a third-party administrator. And this will bring in the Division of Insurance in regulating and overseeing how claims are actually paid. That third-party administrator has to be registered under the section that deals with third-party administrators in the insurance title. And that's to provide that extra level of oversight to ensure that claims are paid and they're done in a responsible manner, consistent with what anyone else has to do to pay claims.
Very good question. Seeing none, this, you're just giving more oversight to the Director of Insurance.
Yeah.
Okay. Objection is removed, so Amendment 4 passes. Amendment 5, I'll move Amendment 5.
No objection.
Mr. Chairman.
Amendment 5 was actually given to us by the Department of Labor, and I'd ask that their representatives come up to speak to the substance of the amendment, if that's possible.
Sure. Give us Mr. Lisanki. I'll never get that right.
That's fine. Paul F. Lisanki again, Director of Division of Workers' Compensation within the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you. Working with your staff, we did ask for the consideration of this amendment. The first part where it says, except that an association of self-insured employers shall be considered an insurer for purposes of AS 2330, that's simply to reflect that now for the first time there will be a there have been insurers, obviously. There have been employers since the beginning of the Act. There has never before been an association of this sort. And so to recognize that and keep them within the framework of the Workers' Compensation Act, where the responsibilities and the entitlements are in terms of insurers or employers, we have recommended that this verbiage be amended in so that simply for purposes of determining entitlements and responsibilities, the associations of self-insured employers will be considered insurers only under AS 2330, the Workers' Compensation Act. The longer portion that talks about starting at page 16, following line 7, The reason why there is the scratched out reference to 067 in the earlier amendment is that you can't just do the same thing for 067 that you do for the rest of 2330, because when you try and determine how much the association will be responsible for paying into the worker safety compensation account, they will not have a premium. They will have an assessment. And right now, all of the contributions are based on either insurance premiums or payments by employers. So what we had to do and what we have asked you to consider in the amendment is to have an insertion in front of each use of the word employer and just add the phrase, each association of self-insured employers. And in that way, it will make clear that the contributions that would have been made by an insurer or an employer in the past will be made by the Association of Self-Insured Employers on behalf of its members. And then the tail end of the amendment, there are provisions that you will need if you start an association. Typically, the members would have, for example, had workers' compensation insurance, and you need a transition period so that they don't get double billed for what they've already paid for insurance. And that's the final change on page 3, is to build in an offset so that if they change in the middle of a year, they will get credit for what's already been paid into the workers' safety compensation account.
Thank you, Paul, for explaining the amendment number 5. Any questions? Yes, Representative Couture.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. On the second part of the amendment, what are we not bringing them under? I see we're taking them under workers' comp, but they're not considered insurance for other laws. Is that the Fair Labor Trade Act, or what are we dropping still?
Through the chair, Representative Kutula, the provisions of Title 21 and the general provision expressing that the self-insured association will not be an insurer for purposes of regulation primarily relates to the accounting portion. You'll see throughout the bill, particularly in places where it is applicable, for example, page 7, line 30, we have made the ability to invest assets and the type of classes that those assets can be invested in consistent with what is allowed in insurance company. But the point being is that there is a substantive difference between statutory accounting and GAAP accounting and internal procedures that an insurance company would be required to go through that isn't appropriate for self-insurance. And that's That's the dividing line that's been done there. But where it is appropriate, we've tried to bring that in, which is the reason for the amendment, to bring in the third-party claim adjusters, to bring in how investments can be made, and to bring in where it applies as a workers' comp insurer. But, of course, the insurance statutes are broad and cover every different type of insurance.
Just anything from the department, or is any other comment from Mr. Lesans?
Through the chair, Representative Couture, I'd agree with that overview. By treating them as an insurer for AS-2330, then that makes sure that they fit into our workers' compensation statute. But the intention was not to have them subject to all of the Title 21 Insurance Act regulations that, since they are not actually an insurance company.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions on Amendment Number 5? Okay. The objection removed? Okay, objection's removed. Amendment 5 is accepted. Okay, were there any other amendments? Representative Waddell.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. On page 15, line 26, the director is given the authority to adopt regulations to implement this new chapter. And notwithstanding some of the testimony by folks I trust who, in fact, have issued me insurance, there was some, and I still think, some lingering concern over what it means to have what a tangible net asset is for purposes of assessing, how viable an organization or entity is and how claims could be paid and what would be used as a basis to issue these certificates. So because the statute that the bill does not define tangible net worth, I thought that it may be prudent to at least say here in on page 15, line 26, to add after the word chapter, put a comma, including defining, quote, tangible net worth, period, close quote. And at least that gives the director some investment to work with those affected, the insured, and insurers and corporations that are going to be part of this joint pooling operation to come up with, I think, what is a mutually agreeable determination of what tangible net worth for everyone's protection. So I thought that may be a way to skin the cat.
Okay, so that would be Amendment 6. Is that correct? Conceptual Amendment Number 6.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Pulaski?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's completely fine.
And I would agree. Again, it's just giving more authority and oversight to the Director of Insurance. Okay. Okay, so you moved Conceptual Amendment Number 6. I objected. Is there any more discussion on Amendment Number 6? Conceptual Amendment Number 6. Seeing none, then Amendment Number 6 will be adopted. Any other amendments? Okay. Any other discussion? Department of Insurance, any more to add to this? Okay. I think the director, she made it clear her preference on this bill. Hopefully these amendments will help. If there's no other discussion, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move out of committee with, as amended, with individual recommendations with the attached fiscal note.
Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 51 passes committee. Thank you both for... Oh, Representative Foster. Thank you, Mr. Plaskett. Thanks, everyone. Yeah. Okay, if everybody can just hold on here while we sign the sheet, and we'll go over. Okay, our next meeting, we're not going to meet tomorrow. Hopefully everybody will be able to participate in the charitable events going on tomorrow, but we are going to meet Sunday.
Our consultant, Daniel Johnson, will be here. So we'll be taking up House Bill 488, which is the PTT, at 1 o'clock Sunday, right here. And the Senate Finance has asked to join us. So it will be another joint finance meeting with the Senate Finance. Again, here at 1 o'clock Sunday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any idea how long that'll go, Mr.
No, I don't. But I think if you have other things going on that day, that would be fine to leave. Okay.
Palm Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Palm Sunday. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, is 1 o'clock going to conflict with church activities?
For me.
For me. At 1 o'clock today?
11.
I didn't set the time.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Rusty.
Well, I was going to say, they can always phone in, too. Okay. During confession.
Well, I didn't set this time, and we're probably working around the consultant's time here because he's flying around the world.
Let's just show up whenever you can and leave whenever you need to. And I think he's even here Monday yet, too, so... Because I think that Chairman Chenault's not here, and he's organizing the PPT, but I think he wants to do a panel committee with Mr. Johnson and some of the representatives on Monday. So, is there anything else, Representative Foster?
No, I needed John Walsh's cell phone number.
Chairman, we're hungry, aren't we? Representative Keller.
Representative Foster and I are deputy priests, so we could hear Bruce's confession actually here, so we're having him on.
All right, very good. Very good. He's multi-talented. Anyway, I do thank everybody. I know it's been a grueling week. Been meeting morning and afternoon, and I appreciate everyone's patience and time, and hopefully get some rest tomorrow, and we'll see you on Sunday. Thank you.
Bye, Jerk. It takes a sinner to know a sinner.